From Avod 3 Event Production, this is Culture Amplified. Revolution Parts is an e-commerce platform serving the automotive industry, and they're on a mission to transform the way auto parts buyers and sellers connect. In this episode, how do you build a happy, healthy culture that prioritizes well-being and work-life balance? What does it mean to hire to the deficit? How does an appreciation of cognitive and neurodiversity help to create a more inclusive and dynamic culture? What is the right way to use behavioral assessments in the recruiting and hiring process? And why is radical transparency and leadership vulnerability so important to create a safe space for employees to deal with their own humanity? All this and more coming up. Welcome to the Culture Amplified podcast. I'm Adrian McIntyre. I'm joined for this episode by Cameron McGee, owner of Avod 3 Event Production. Welcome, Cameron.
Glad to be here.
Jessica Klosterman is director of sales for Avod 3. Welcome, Jessica.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here as well.
Our featured guest for this episode is Kiara Hughes, director of people operations for Revolution Parts. Welcome, Kiara.
Hiya.
We're so glad that you're here. The reason for this series is we're getting into the world of people who are dealing with people. We're exploring the opportunities, the challenges in different industries so that we can all learn together. Kiara, why don't you start us off for this conversation by giving us a little context for your company and your role? What is Revolution Parts and what are you doing there?
I can't get out of cars. So Revolution Parts is an online marketplace for auto parts. B2B. It's a SaaS company. That's the most simplified way to do it. We have the largest dealer network of auto parts in North America. And we make sure that certain OEMs and other people get the auto parts that they need. And if you're a car person like I am, and have built cars and worked on cars, it is a huge market.
What's different about your company than other OEM part suppliers, supply chain, things of that nature?
Three things, I guess I would say. Ibrahim, my CEO, if you're listening, do not be mad if I get this wrong. No. So the first thing is the network, the breadth of the network. The second is the secret sauce and the engineering platform. And then the third would be our commitment to the customer in partner relations.
Yeah, great. And what's your role in people operations? Let's get into the nitty-gritty of what you do, because this is the secret sauce of what makes great companies great.
It's an odd story. Everything, I can premise most of my professional career by saying, you're not going to believe this story. So I am the director of people operations. I was at another company for a long time and retired. I had a lot of my parents were unwell and I wanted to travel. And so I wanted to take my daughter and we went to Bali and we traveled the world. And I wanted to do that and take care of my parents. So I was out. Like I loved my former company, like truly loved, like I cried when I left. But I got bored because I have a lot of energy, which I'm calm now, but that'll go away. I have a lot of energy and I have a lot to say. I have a lot of energy, but it's not useless energy. Like I want to do things. I want to do things for people and with people. I love people. I genuinely love people. I say a lot of people, you know, are not in the right career. I'm actually in the right job. Like I love humans. It's never a pain. It's always fun. Even weird, quirky humans to me are fascinating and everybody teaches me something really cool. And I'm like a student of humanity. So I love it. So I started networking and I just said, hey, I'm bored. These are the things I really love to do in my career. I love talent acquisition. I love the art of talent acquisition. I love the art of happy people at work. I love the art of representing underrepresented groups. I love all these things. So if you're a company or you know someone who needs that, I don't need to make a lot of money and I actually don't want to work full time. I just want to help however I can help. And so then I took a lot of the things I knew and put together like a training program for recruiters because those really don't exist. Like there's not a lot of them. You can buy a module online, but I think that since it's a people operations job, a human should train a human. So I put together a little training thing and presented it to some of my friends who own staffing companies for free because I just wanted to spread the word, right? through those meanderings, someone who was a former employee at my former company was at Revolution Parts. And he said that they needed, they didn't have a people leader, and they wanted someone who'd been through a few reps of creating a happy people, diverse people team. And he knew me from our previous company. He knew what I was known for there and asked me to talk to the CEO. And I did, and said, I don't want the job, but I'm going to help. Like, I'll help. Like, I'll come as a consultant. And I did that for a while. And then midway through that, they were like, we really want you to come on board. And I said, okay. And so I did. And I started there in like April or May of last year. But my first official day as my title is October 30th of 2023. Yeah.
One of the questions we've been asking in this series, and I'm actually going to ask all of you this question, but Cameron, you have to go last. You're the owner of the company, so you have a skewed perspective on this. If we ask people to define culture, their answers would generally converge around something that sounds more or less the same. Mm-hmm. But when we ask what's different about this place than any other place you've worked, and the follow-up question is why, what practices, what activities, what actual things do people do that makes it different? We get some interesting answers. So, Jessica, what's different about the culture at Avod 3 than other places that you've worked, and why is that difference there?
I love that question. We always say our people make the difference, and that's internally, side to side with our teammates. Like, our team makes the difference in one another, and then to our clients. Our people make the difference. That is what sets us apart from the next guy, from the competitor. And I think the internal practices, the inner workings of our team, there's a lot of things that we do. But the first one that comes to mind is one of our values, which is just a high standard of excellence, which is why I joined the team in the first place, was because there was a standard of excellence that we had set that was set from the top down. And I used this analogy recently, but I said, you know, it's like, we've got this bar that we want you to reach. You can't reach it. You can't even really jump to it, but we're going to give you the tools. We're going to equip you and teach you how and get you stronger to be able to jump and reach that bar. And then we're going to raise it, you know? And yeah. So we have a thing in our team called Next Time Notes, which is Kaizen, just this cadence of what can we do better? And also, what did we do well? And we do that for everything. We don't just do that for the events that we serve on. We do that for our meetings. We do that for our hiring processes. We do that for our conversations that happen in each of our departments. Like, what can we do better? What can we implement that would change this or make it more efficient? And so there's just this continual cadence of wanting to be better, to simplify things, to help people grow and to help them achieve more personally and professionally. And it just bleeds into a lot of times you'll see it in like HR department, or you'll see it in just like the skill department, but it's like in every department that our team serves, which is so cool.
What's different about the culture at Revolution Parts than anywhere else you've worked, and why?
Well, can I backtrack?
Of course.
Can I backtrack?
Please.
So kudos to you guys for doing that. But also, do you create a space where people feel okay to fail?
Oh, yeah. That's such a great question. And when we do our Next Time Notes, it's on a platform that everybody sees. So it's an internal company platform. It's like, and I wouldn't say there's a lot of like pointing fingers, but there is so much ownership on that platform of like, y'all, I dropped the ball here. Like, this was my responsibility, and I didn't set my team up for success because of this. And again, this doesn't just have to be like with us on shows. That happens a lot. And there is a lot of room to fail on shows because the standard of excellence is so high. There's lots of ways that, this connection could have been tighter. I'm not the technician, so I definitely can't speak like all the internal lingo in terms of like the technical side of things, but we're always refining how we can be more efficient with our tech side of things. But then if you look like across the team in every department, when we do those types of like call outs, it's very much like, I should have led my team better by doing this. This is how I'm going to change that next time. And I think we are always continually trying to have a space where you cannot just lead down. but where you can lead across and up, which is really cool. And I think it's rare.
It is rare. It's difficult. It doesn't matter if you are a 3-person company, a 50-person company, a 115-person company, or a 20,000-person company. It's hard because if your leaders don't set the example and act as if, it doesn't trickle down and it has to be authentic. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is the creating a space where it's okay for people to fail, which is where, I don't know if we'll get into this, but where vulnerability for leaders comes heavily into play. I'm a very vulnerable, like, lead with empathy leader where I will be the first to say to my team, oh, I screwed up today. Oh, I did such a bad thing today. Like I really, momming 101, like I will say it. A lot of places I've worked think I shouldn't do that, right? Because they think it like diminishes my leadership gravitas, right? Like, well, I'm like, well, you mean you're diminishing my humanity? Yeah. Like I'm a human. Yeah. Like I'm not going to get mad at yesterday. My daughter this week is her parent teacher conferences at school. That means early dismissal at 1:50. Because most people's workday ends at 1:50.
Yeah, convenient.
So I'm literally at work and I get the text from my daughter. It says, Mom, where are you at? I go, what do you mean, where am I? It's early dismissal. I literally had to move a meeting. Sorry, everybody. Didn't do great job momming today. Gotta go. Gotta get my kid. I'll be back on in a day. The point is most places I work would not want me to do that. They would say quietly, go deal with it. Or can you call someone to pick up your daughter? It's very different. So I think that I love the standard for excellence and for raising the bar. Hashtag at Amazon bar raiser. But I also love that that's only part of the story. The other part of the story is leadership trickle down, create a safe space and vulnerability. So yeah, I think that's great. And it's interesting. So I thought that my last job and this job would be a little bit similar because they're both kind of in the automotive space, but they're drastically different. The last company was a major tech firm that was bluntly an e-commerce. I mean, it's an e-commerce company. You buy cars online. But this company, we're not business to consumer. We're B2B. And our end partner or the people we're talking to are in the auto parts industry. I mean, they might have come up, literally, they were a mechanic, right? Versus a target demographic of a 28-year-old who wants to buy a car for 10 grand. Like it's just very different. So therefore, that means that the internal culture's different per department. Because if you're a customer-facing person, the internal employee at Revolution Parts, you are talking to a mechanic or a service leader, and how you would approach that person in an authentic way is very different than how we talk to our software engineers. Yeah, there's a different frame of reference. So that's why, again, cognitive diversity, I don't like to just talk about DE&I, like underrepresented groups from a different race, sexual orientation, religion, no, it's about the cognitive diversity is difference in thought. And that difference in thought comes from your experience in your life. And I think that that's always fascinating and rich, but that's why the culture is so different in different departments where I work, because we have a different exterior persona that we have to be or want to be authentic to those people. But then internally, we all like being there. I mean, because we're small. Our CEO sits at a table, you know, with the CTO, like they all sit right there. So we're small and approachable, which I love. And they're very willing to hear, hey, maybe you did that wrong. And so that's the culture. So the culture is, we have 6 core values, right? They're all focused, a lot of them are focused around the customer, right? Wow them is the customer. Work together, win together. It's like version, most people have that one. One of the ones that's very controversial that I actually have put up my fists about a little bit, and I'm trying to decide if I want to fight this, if I want to die on this hill, is move fast, fail fast is one of our core values. Now, the intent is take a risk.
Yeah. And iterate.
Yeah. You get that.
Yeah.
But if you don't get that, yeah. it just means that we're saying do everything really quickly. It doesn't, yeah. And you're going to fail.
And
you
just
hear the word fail,
it. Yeah.
And it's this churn.
Yeah.
So that one I've been fighting with the CEO about. I love the intent, but I just don't know if it's translating. So that's the culture. Like we do move fast. I mean, that is, we really move fast. In fact, one of the things I'm trying to do is slow us down. Literally, like I'm one of those, and that we were talking about boundaries outside, Jessica. One of the things is like, for example, you've all had it at work. Hey, can you do this? And humans want to say, yeah, I can do that. Especially
able.
If you want to do well at your job.
Yeah.
And so I say two things, either no or sure. The capacity of the team is this many projects. Four. Here are our four. Are you saying that the new thing you want us to do is more important than one of these four? Great. Which of the four are we going to drop? Mm-hmm. We don't do five. We can do five half-assed.
Yep.
Or we can do three really well. Which would you prefer?
Yeah.
I'm going to just go ahead and do the three really well. But I want you to do five half-assed. No. No. So that is very, and that's hard to do. I mean, that's like hard to do. You've been trained to please your whole life. That's been hard to do, which means your leader just has to make it okay for you to do that. So that's our culture is evolving. It really is. We're trying to do things better always. So we're evolving, approachable, evolving, and a little bit disparate because of the people that are our audience, different audience. But internally, it's a very happy culture. I had my dogs in. The other day, we were hanging out. I mean, who doesn't love a fat pug sitting at a desk? So it's that's what I would say.
Let's circle back to the different audiences part in a minute. But Karen, I know Kiara just touched on something that's really important to you, which is creating a place where people feel safe and feel accepted for who they are. Let's explore this further. And let's talk about cognitive diversity, not just the other sort of typical, visible, et cetera, forms of difference. Cameron, why is it so important to you in your industry to create a place where people can be who they are and then become better at the same time? Like, it's not just stay who you are, start where you are, but don't stay where you are. Was a poster in the gym at my grad school. Yeah. But why is that important to you? And talk a little bit about your industry in that regard as well.
Love that poster. I haven't spent a lot of time in a gym in my life, but I think that'd be a good poster for our office. That's a good one. Acceptance is really important to me. And Edgar Papke has a great book called True Alignment that you might geek out on. He talks about different brand intentions and different things that our cultures are driving and that our external brands are driving. And he talks in there about this word acceptance. And I think a lot of companies, a lot of us in our professional lives with our LinkedIn profiles and resumes, we're rewarded for competency. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And we want to be smart. We want to be good at our job because we want to take care of others and serve others. And so we want to be competent. Everybody wants to be competent. But really the key, in my opinion, to growth starts with acceptance. I mean, you can look at any Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, you have to start with saying, like, I have a problem, you know, like, let's accept where you are and now we can grow. And so what I'm passionate about in the workplace is this acceptance model. And Jessica hit the nail on the head. We've got a high bar of excellence because we do event production. We do the AV on people's biggest day of the year. It's like a national conference. You brought in Tony Robbins, whatever your keynote speaker is, or we do stuff with, you know, Fortune One. And we did the show last week with the President of the United States. Like, when you're on these high profile things, they don't really appreciate, incompetence. You know, we have to be competent. We have to have a high bar. But in my experience, my personal growth and my journey in my life starts with acceptance. And I love that poster because I think you do have to say, you know, we accept you where you are, but we also want to teach you how to jump. We want to teach you how to jump higher. And if that's interesting to you, then come on, because everybody on the other side of this door is doing that. And if you want to stay where you are, maybe don't come here, you know, and that's okay. But every one of us, it's like running a gym or something. I mean, we're all trying to grow because I think that's the key to life is growth, you know?
So what are the specific practices that allow you as leaders to create that environment and actually work with folks, because people bring all kinds of stuff to the party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how do you think about that, Kiara? Where do you start and where do you go?
Authentically living it, being that. Like, I can't ask somebody to trust me if I'm not trusting them, and I can't ask somebody to be vulnerable if I'm not being vulnerable. So that's where I start. Like, that's it. And inconsistency. So radical, I just wrote a LinkedIn blog post a month ago about radical transparency. So I'm into radical acceptance and radical transparency. And humans are humans and they want the truth, even if it's not good news, right? So that's how, that for like, and then encouraging my team, because, you know, we hire people. So the workforce is literally built by my team. So I make sure that my team feels that way authentically. And we have scorecards, but I literally say, well, you can't put this anywhere on here and there's no way to quantify it. Let's just leave this blank space for recruiter gut, that gut feeling that you are like, and you can't really, you have a gut when you're going to like somebody, when you're going to, you have to be careful because that leads sometimes to unconscious bias.
Yeah,
I was literally going to ask that. But it's clearly the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
But I like that you're empowering them with the squishy.
Yeah, the squishy. Like I don't know. Now, I mean, give me the reasons you felt that way, but don't, and I'm not saying that's, might only be 10%, but that 10% is the difference between hiring someone and them quitting in 3 months. Like, you can't. So it's that gut feeling that you have to empower people to also have, but that also comes with reps of like being a recruiter forever. Right? Like, it's a muscle memory for me personally, because I've been doing this for so long. But frankly, that's why I only hire senior recruiters. I actually don't hire mid-level recruiters. I hire junior sourcers I can train from scratch, or seniors who have done it. I don't hire the middle. Because I need to be sure of where that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The event planners at your organization face many challenges. Tight deadlines, budget constraints, negotiating with vendors, and the pressure of delivering an impactful event that captivates the audience and accomplishes your goals. It's a stressful job, and Avod 3 Event Production is here to help. We produce over 100 events a year nationwide. To make sure your biggest day of the year is the best it can be, we'd like to give you access to our exclusive Showflow template. A Showflow does exactly what it sounds like. It ensures your general sessions, breakout rooms, and other presentations flow seamlessly from one queue to the next. Set your events team up for success with this valuable Showflow template. It's available to download for free on our website at avad3.com/flow. That's avad3.com/flow, or click the link in the notes for this episode.
Conversations around cognitive diversity, neurodivergence are relatively new. And this is, I mean, the research has been around for a while, but in terms of breaking through into a public conversation or a workplace conversation, it's not the typical. I mean, everybody knows Myers-Briggs or some other silly thing, but we're actually talking about some fairly substantive developments in the way we understand that people's brains work differently.
Yeah.
You brought this up as something that's extremely important to you. Mm-hmm. Say more about that.
Well, so this can go two ways. It can go the whole cognitive diversity way, creative diversity in thought and action, right? Then there's also the pragmatic side, which is when you bring in neurodivergence, for example. I have, whether I made it very obvious or I did it and didn't really say anything about it, just kind of did it, not calling attention to it on purpose. But I've always, especially when I've built recruiting teams from little to bigger, right? I mean, you can always hire one and it's a huge hire. Your first hire is a huge hire.
Everything.
Then when you get to 42, you're like, okay, but always hire to the deficit. So for example, if I hire an amazing senior recruiter and that senior recruiter is very calm and very measured and very like, I've done this and you love that. I mean, that's great. People respond to that. It makes you like, they are chill and chaos. It's great. I'm probably going to hire the next person to be a little more like me.
Oh, that's so wise.
Yeah. Like a little more like.
I understand now.
Okay. Like, hey, but what if we, and you're just like, because I used to laugh at my former company. I swear to God, every time I'd go to my boss and say, what if we, she was like, oh God. But I always want the what if we people. Like I always want the, can we do this?
Like, you need them.
There's two kinds of people in the world. Those will come to you with an idea or solution of all the reasons you can make it work. And those humans who will say all the reasons why it won't. I don't hang with B. Cool. Got it. No. I want to be with A. How do we make it work? And now if we go through 8 million things and it doesn't work, okay, cool, we tried. God, I want to try.
Yeah.
And so I'll usually hire a chill and then a more inquisitive, dynamic. And then the third might be someone who's more tactical.
Yeah.
That is the person that's like, oh, well, we did all that, but who's documenting this?
This sounds like working genius. It's like the same.
Yeah. So it's like a puzzle, right? And it's only as stronger as, I mean, it's just like, you know, when you see something level, it's not as firm as something staggered, right? So that's how I've done it, whether, and I've never admitted this before, but I do it deliberately, but I make it look like I didn't, just because I don't want people to have a preconceived notion about it.
Right, because that could be bad too.
It could be bad. But I mean, I do that on purpose, like hire to the deficit, right? And I don't mean deficit in a negative way. I just mean the area that we need more help in.
Balance.
So that's how.
What's the place for, you mentioned working genius just now under your breath, but what's the place for these sorts of assessments? I could see the potential for helping people understand themselves and others better. I've certainly taken them, mm-hmm. not in the context of being an employee. I'm a self-employed to the core kind of a person. But, you know, from Strengths Finder to a predictive index to, yeah. you know, all of the ones, what's the place for that? Can some companies over-rely on it? They take your DISC profile and now it's like you are stuck with this. This is who you are.
Yeah, DNA or something.
And it's almost like this weirdly deterministic.
Yes.
Like now we've got your box. Oh, you're one of those,
yep.
right? Which as an Enneagram 4, I just have to say is like my worst nightmare. There is no box. I am absolutely unique, don't you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, what's the role of assessments of this kind?
So here's what's interesting. I've changed my opinion on that. So when I was, again, large company prior, even when it wasn't as large, I was anti. I did not want to do it. I didn't want to pigeonhole people.
Okay.
Like, but I mean, we went rapid growth. I mean, again, I wrote a blog on that too. Hypergrowth is rad was the name of it. Like, again, we went from 800 people to 20,000. So how do you... Because I maintained that that first chat with a recruiter is not 10 minutes. That's a 30 to 45 minute conversation. And they're like, Kiata, you're going to do that for hiring 20,000 people. You're going to do that. I go, well, maybe not for like touch labor or like more the certain types. But I was the head of technical and corporate recruiting at one time, which is the G&A and the higher, like the more skilled. And I was like, yeah, yep, sure am. I'm going to do that. Yeah, but no. There's no substitute for this. Like, we have to talk to people.
Good.
I want to hear it. I want to hear their story. I want to hear, because a resume is like great, but it's not the full story.
No, never is.
It's just never the full story. And it's not, it's like so out of context. I mean, it's a great starting point, but like, you know, so was the foundation of this building without being built on it. Like I needed more. And so I was anti that. And I stayed true. To the minute I left, we didn't use them.
At all.
No, we didn't do it. And I had a peer leader who was very upset with me and she really wanted to use them. I go, hey.
Good diversity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, right. I said, you do you, boo. You use them for you. I get it. You should do that. Well, I totally understand. Knock yourself out. But I run this part and I'm saying we're not doing it.
What changed?
We never did. Well, so this company, this company that I joined, we were huge changes when I joined. And it's part of my job to steward some of those changes. And so time, I don't have time to build that from scratch because I haven't hired. So this is where I was spoiled at the last job. I had one recruiter and one coordinator for what is now a very famous tech company, right? And so it was all of us in a tiny building on Indian School Road in an old grocery store, right? Where I could stand up and see the whole company from where I was sitting. And so the team built it literally from scratch. So we had a blank slate. Now it's not a blank slate. People are in place. So I have to, that's harder because you have to change how they've been thinking. People don't love change. Most humans don't. I love it, but most people don't. So you're not only telling them that they're changing, the implied assertion is that they're doing it wrong. So that's not fun, right? And so, and I always approach it with just like vulnerability and humor, but that's a thing. So what changed using the assessment is they acknowledge they were hiring wrong. And for me to do it, get it to do it better, it's going to take time. I had no team. I had to build a team. Like I had to put all the processes in place. I'm telling you, things that I thought were in place when I joined that I thought were just obvious, and not to be like, I wasn't being arrogant. I just genuinely thought these are the obvious things. Like, how can you even build a company without this literal template document?
Right.
Find out they didn't even have that document. And I'm like, oh, I almost swore. Oh, crap. I was like, I don't just have to tell people how to use this document. I have to literally create this document.
Yeah.
Show them how to use it. I'm like, what else are we missing? And it was a lot. So I don't, and I want to do it right. So using the behavioral assessments helps because we're not confident that how we're hiring is the best yet. Right. And so we specifically chose Criteria Corp is who we use because they give assessments that test people's how they think, not what they think.
Good.
Right. And we like it because, yeah, it gives a score. Cool. My CFO and I, we skip the score because it gives the insights on this person is 82% more likely to speak up when they disagree with their boss. This person is 2% less likely to speak up when they're overloaded. And that kind of stuff. That is what I care about. So a lot of people don't love doing it. It's 23 minutes. It's two things, 23 minutes total. And I'm very careful. And it's literally in that template that we created for the recruiters, the talent screen template. It says, so I'm very, again, radical transparency. You go through the screen and then at the end, it literally says, tell the candidate exactly where they stand and what the next steps are and how long this process is going to take.
Love that. We do the same thing in our hiring.
Yep.
It's so important.
Yep. And you think that is such a game changer for people. And it's like so obvious, but like—
But it's not normal somehow.
It's just not normal, right? And then explain that the Criteria Corp test, and there was thought, do we do it at the beginning of the hiring process or at the end? A lot of people wait to do it at the end, like— Because like, why put people through that unless you think they're going to give them an offer? And my thing is no, because then they feel like getting an offer is contingent upon the results of the test.
That's the sticky thing.
Yeah. And I'm not doing that. So now everybody does it. Like you're not moving on to the next level, which is a hiring manager screen, unless you do this on purpose, because it is not contingent on you getting a job. We're too early in the process to even think that far. Second, if the results of that assessment say that you are great at this or terrible at this, we're not going to spend at 45 minutes hammering you on what you're not good at.
Yeah.
And if you're not good at that and we need that, we're going to have an honest conversation with you about maybe this isn't the right fit, right? Before we waste anybody's time. I've decided that it's at early in the state, like right after the talent screen. It goes straight to that. It's almost simultaneous. We set up the hiring manager screen at the same time. We set up the Criteria Corp assessment because we want that information going into the whole thing, because we also, honestly, it is for the candidate's benefit. We want to interview them in a way that's comfortable for them.
It's good.
Like if they're very linear in thought, I'm not telling stories about like, but if they're more creative in thought, like for a graphic designer, for example, I'm interviewing a graphic designer very differently than I'm interviewing an accountant. And if you think that you can interview all humans the same way, I'm already going to go out on this HR limb and say you're wrong, because not everybody thinks the same, which is where neurodivergence comes in and cognitive diversity comes in. But so that's why. So early on in the process, and I don't like binary things like yes or no. It's more like, what is this person geared toward doing is the way. And then again, senior recruiters know to interview people that way. And then you tell the hiring manager, hey, heads up. This is a candidate. I really like this person. I'm going to just tell you though, if you think you're going to be like, well, tell me this time you did, you're not going to get that out of it. So may I make a suggestion on talking to them in this way? It seems so like labor intensive to do it that way because it's a lot of work, but the end result is way less wasted time in the process and way fewer offers turned down.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about going back to something you said earlier, the diversity of your customer base, because of course, building great cultures is important because you want to have a place to work that you want to work at, right?
Yes.
But it's not just for the people inside the house. It's also part of a business strategy. You want your team to interface well with the folks that drive growth for the company. And that's the client, that's the customer, that's the outsider. Jessica, in the events world, you're dealing with so many different layers of folks. You know, at some of the enormous companies that you serve, you've got folks differently positioned. They might be in a department. They might be part of a core events execution team. They might be part of senior leadership. And there are cultures of those different sections.
Sure.
Of your clients' companies. And you're representing Avod 3 when you are dealing with them. How do you manage that interface such that they feel respected and known, but your culture is also shining through?
Yeah. I think there's kind of two things that stand out to me. And one of them would be being inquisitive, asking really good questions. It's like two side by side. You got to ask good questions and you got to listen really well. And I think in an interview process, it's got to have the same cadence, especially those that are client-facing. We have a lot of people in the on the technician side who are, they're just locked into the gear. They're locked into the execution of their skill and their craft. But in terms of like our team that's client-facing, they've got to be able to ask really good questions and they have to listen really well. They have to slow down. They have to make sure that they're not just listening to hear, but they're listening to understand. Yeah. And so that's what I look for a lot in our team and continuing to develop that. We can all get better at asking really good questions. And sometimes it's hard when you're working with someone you're either uncomfortable with or you're not naturally gifted at just kind of matching them where they are. You have to, that's a learned skill. And some people are better at it naturally than others, but you can always get better at it. You can always get better at ways that you can ask deeper, more involved questions to get them to talk more and to get them to connect at a deeper level. And so that's really what, that's kind of the thing that I look for in our team.
One of the things I found very interesting that you folks have told me over recent days as we've been together doing episodes and just talking afterwards is that in the event production world, the technical team is usually, there's a desire in many cases, not yours, to keep those people at a distance. The event planner, who's usually working directly for the client, who's hiring the production team, is almost trying to protect their client from the people wearing the black shirts and pants, right? Because those people are grumpy. They're arrogant. They think they know. It's kind of an engineer-ish mindset. And I have experienced what you're referring to. Your goal is that Avod 3 is different, that everyone could potentially be client-facing. Cameron, why is that important to you? And how has that set you apart from the rest of the industry?
I think when you go, you know, to certain, I don't want to say resorts or something like that. I'm not trying to say that, you know, privilege or whatever, but when you go to even a restaurant, you go to certain restaurants or certain places where the culture is so evident. It's because the first person who greets you is just as passionate about it as the head chef in the back or the CEO or whatever place you are. That's culture. Culture is how we do things around here. And so, yes, the event planner's job is to be very put together because a lot of the vendors that it takes to do an event are relatively commoditized, sadly. You know, tables and chairs are a commodity. And so the event planner, whoever's hosting the event, hires this event planner to be this middleman, to be this layer between them. And it's their job to kind of don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain over here, like Wizard of Oz. You know, don't pay attention to these people who are bringing in the tables and chairs. Everything's fine. But if you really think about it, the keynote speaker, that's who they're going to get mic'd up by backstage, you know, and really the crew is the front lines. The event planner cannot be everywhere. Like when you attend a conference, you go to a breakout room, like the crew is really running that breakout room at that point. The event planner is not everywhere. And so I just realized early on, we need to make sure that everybody's ready to be client facing. You never know what kind of impression you're making on the venue, the someone who's doing a site visit the day you're there doing this national conference, the next week's national conference is there doing a site visit. And I just want our brand represented really well. I can't be everywhere. Jessica can't be everywhere. We can't just say that the top leadership is carefully making sure you don't see these people back here. They're on the front lines and we want to make sure they're seen. And then what I think the challenge is in our hiring process, in the team interviews, something we realized years ago that was starting to happen by accident was a little bit of bias, a little bit towards, okay, we want to be client facing. So does that mean everybody's bubbly? Like, what does that mean?
Yep.
And we've had to really steer the team towards, no, I love what you said earlier. You said staggered is stronger than level. And we've had to really steer the team towards, no, we can accept everybody exactly where they are. We can have a rainbow vibrant spectrum, you know, like mm-hmm. just a mm-hmm. charcuterie board. I don't know what ridiculous metaphor, but yeah. we can have a great balanced diet of everybody here and a brand that's known for professionalism. Our name, Avad 3, the Avad is Hebrew for serve, but people talk about our service, but they talk about our service through the lens of professionalism. I love having those AV people on my show because their professionalism makes me look better. It makes our CEO look better, makes our executive director look better. And I think that starts in the hiring process. It comes from brand consistency, but it's extremely important.
And I'll say internally, it also stems from like the leadership and mm-hmm. that listening and asking questions happens internally with our team too. What we talked about earlier with like each department, like our managers, our leaders, our directors, they're all encouraging those questions and listening well to their team and like inside the team. And that is going to come out when they're serving on site too.
We've got a good window into your industry. Kiara, tell us about yours. How do these dynamics, the team versus the customer and how they interface, how does that play out for you?
Well, so one thing I want to say to tie what you both said together is that I think the definition of professional needs to change, right? You think of professional, like old school IBM, you know, like you think of buttoned up yeah. as professional.
Suit and tie or something.
Suit and tie yeah, is professional.
Yeah, yeah. Dark suit, white shirt, red tie.
Yeah, yeah. correct, right?
That's IBM.
Oh, when I moved here, I had to wear pantyhose I was like, what? It's 120 degrees, I got to wear pantyhose? Like no. So that needs to change. And I think it is changing. Like, say what you want about millennials and like Gen Z, but they're changing how we think about showing up to work. I will also say one thing that's interesting. You both said something. So at my last job, the person at the front desk's title was first impression specialist. And our CEO, who's very famous, interviewed every single one of them.
Wow.
He's like, if that's the first human you're seeing when you walk into our company,
yeah.
they better be amazeballs, right? So there's that. So he would say that. He's a great person. And then the second thing is that you touched on that I had said about my team, and I joked and people laughed all the time. I'm like, I'm glad you think I'm being cute, but I'm not, I'm being dead serious. My team, and I said, was interchangeably awesome. Interchangeably awesome. If I couldn't be at a meeting, I could send anybody on my team, even if they were hierarchically four levels down. And I know they're going to show up great to that meeting because I hired an authentically beautiful human. So authentically, interchangeably awesome. So that's the thing. So just keep your hiring bar very, and I hate almost use the word high. I keep it authentic and real and where your core values are being met and your human values are being met. So I just wanted to piggyback off of those two things because those are hugely important. So now I forgot your question. Go.
Yeah. In your industry in general, I mean, on one hand, you're a technology company,
yeah.
but you're serving a very traditional mm-hmm. automotive industry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you've got to have the interface between those two worlds. And as you alluded to earlier in the conversation, on the customer side, there's a whole range of folks
yeah.
who represent a variety of different backgrounds, different mm-hmm. Mechanical and technical abilities, different levels of passion yep. for cars,
yep.
which you personally share.
I know.
So how do you think about the interfaces. I mean, I know the platform itself,
yeah,
the secret sauce part of this, the tech,
yeah,
is the primary interface, but there's more, always, there's always more.
It is. I actually, so my current CEO and I talked about this last week, truly understanding the product. Like, if you truly understand how to do something or what something does, then you can riff off of how to address a different audience, right? You have to just know it. Like, anytime somebody wants to talk to me about the things I'm passionate about, I'm not nervous to have these conversations because I know it so well that, like, I'm like, yeah, you can't throw anything at me in 25 years. I'm not comfortable answering. But if I am really uncomfortable with the subject matter, I don't feel like I know it that well, then I'm more likely to stick to the script because that's, the script is safe, right? That's why you learn great foundational reps, a foundational, like, it's just like learning a new language. And I learned Spanish, you know, you get your verbs, your tenses, and you just, and then that's your foundation. And then you can go off of that once you memorize vocabulary. So it's kind of like that. If you have to know the product really, really well and believe in the product a lot. So then now we're just talking about something we're both interested in.
Now, in this case, is the product your platform or is the product the parts sold on your platform?
Our platform.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
Yep.
And as we think about the future, right? And it, of course, in tech and innovation, we're always thinking about the future. You can't have a culture of innovation if your only innovation is happening at the engineering level.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Innovative products and design processes are part of the equation. But if you're not innovating at your people level,
yep,
you can't call it a culture of innovation. You can call it a really cool machine or whatever.
Right.
So as you look toward the future and as we wrap up this conversation, what are some of the things you're working on that maybe aren't in place yet, or some things that are on the horizon coming at us all that we haven't fully yet figured out how to address? What's your future thinking right now?
Well, so most companies do an ENPS, like a pulse. And often two things are a result of that pulse. Nothing happens. So now the employees just feel like, we just want to know your deep innermost thoughts because we want to know what we're up against.
Yikes.
Right? Right? We just want to hear what you're thinking, but we're not going to do anything about
yikes
it.
Yikes.
Right?
Worst case scenario.
Worst case. Or most of the time, oh my gosh, we didn't know you felt this way. We love you. Let's fix everything.
Hmm.
No. Nope. So we did an EMPS pulse. And so I said to the team, I'm not going to sit here and tell you we're going to fix everything that you asked us to fix. That would be disingenuous and impossible. So we're going to look at, by rating, what the math said were the two things that are scored the lowest. And we're going to only address those two in that first half of 2024. And then we're only going to address the second two in the second half of 2024. Cool. Yeah. So the first step was seeing what actually was important to the people on the team and the whole company, right? And saying, okay, so how are we going to quantify and make this actionable, that these are things that people care about? And we did, and we put a plan together and we said, like, for example, one of them was it's work to home life balance. I mean, so here's what I always find interesting. So I'm a recruiter at heart. I'm a recruiter. Like I love to talk and network, and I actually love the roots of recruiting, right? Like, I'm a leader in recruiting now, but I actually still love to just recruit. I'd rather do that than like manage people sometimes. In every time we ask people, and I've put this on every template I've ever created ever, what motivates you to take one job over another? Just tell me, what are your motivating factors? I want to know what they authentically are. And then the next thing, and when we talk about money, is I always say, tell me what you need to make. Give me your happy dance down the street. You name your next child Kiata number. Give me the, okay, I'll consider it number. And give me the kick rocks, you're undervaluing me, bounce Kiata number. I need those three numbers. But I just want to know what on motivates you, because I'm not going to sit here. And if you say that it is you want like to add this gravitas to your resume, we're probably not the place.
Hmm.
I'll just tell you right now. And I'm blunt about it. So the point of this story is, do you know how rarely it's money? It's never money. It's so rarely money. It's always culture stability of my job, work to home life balance. That's what it is every time. So why are we talking about money? Like, so, I mean, we need to know money. We need to do a budget. We got to pay the bills, right? But like, so the reason why I'm taking this a few steps back before I answer is that when every candidate we talk to is saying that money isn't important and work to home life balance and culture is important, and our EMPS is saying that they want to feel more valued at work and not feel burnout and they want a home life balance, those are the things that we need to address first. How are we going to do it? And very simply, one of the first things that, like, I was there like a month, was our company is lovely. They give every person 2 days off for the year, like free PTO for volunteer activities. I love that. So I said, let's run a report. How many people are actually using that? And it was like 3%. Like, it was low, right? So why? Do you not feel like you can take the time off of your job to do that? Like, why? But the bottom line is, we said, okay, so let's make it more meaningful. Let's swap out one of those days for a, I just can't do it today, boss. Like, you don't need to give me a volunteer reason. You don't need to give me proof that you volunteered. You don't need to call PTO. It's a no questions asked. I am burnt out today. I just can't life today. That's it. It didn't cost our company any more money because we were already allotting for the time, but it was a more meaningful use of people's, what they wanted.
Well, you're showing that you heard them.
And we heard them, right? So other things that we do are when we do like team engagement activities. What are you actually interested in doing? Like, we were doing this. Nobody was that involved in it. So we did our annual offsite, our annual kickoff meeting in January. And one of the new hires that we hired recently, he's a rev operations manager who's lovely. He was like, you know what? Do you care if I run a poker tournament? I'm like, where? He's like, here at the office, like the night that everybody shows up. I go, no, we'll just buy pizza and whatever. And you run this poker tournament, thinking they're already here. They've already flown in from all over. That went off like crazy. So I'm like, okay, I've been knocking myself out. Do we spend $1 jillion at Topgolf where no one's going to go and they feel like they're not, they're away from their families? Or do we just host this $200 on pizza? Okay. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, you just don't. So get in touch with what people actually want and then that's provide cool. Something that addresses what they actually want. And it sounds so simple, but that's it. So that's what we put in place. Initiatives that promote work to home life balance, hyper being ruthless about prioritization of tasks and project planning, and then giving people time in the safe space to take the time they need or say no. I mean, I have like, I made a list here. Like, I have literally a DEI initiative that I'm putting in place at where I work now. And I had like literally steps 1 through 9, like step 1, step 2. And I wrote it out if you want it. But ground zero step is only working for a company where the leadership authentically believes in its people and believes in how important this is. Because if they didn't, I'm telling you right now, I would not work here.
Kiara Hughes is Director of People Operations for Revolution Parts. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
It was fun and easy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Culture Amplified. If you enjoyed the conversation, please share this podcast with a colleague who might also find it valuable. It's easy to do. Just click the share button in the app you're listening to now. Culture Amplified is brought to you by Avod 3 Event Production, located in Northwest Arkansas and serving clients nationwide. Avod 3 believes that event production should be flawless so your message can shine. They provide many free resources for corporate and nonprofit event planners on their website, including planning checklists, technical guides, and templates. You can download them free of charge at avod3.com. That's avad3.com. Special thanks to Cameron McGee, Tabitha McFadden, Amy Bates, Jessica Klosterman, Steve Sullivan, Kimber Reeves, and Olivia Martin at Avod3 for helping bring this podcast series to life. Podcast strategy, on-site recording, and post-production by Speed of Story, a B2B communications firm led by Adrian McIntyre, that's me, and Jen McIntyre. Music by Diego Martinez. Most of all, we'd like to thank our featured guests for this series, who so generously shared their time, stories, and insights with us. You can learn more about them in the written notes for each episode at avod3.com/podcast. For all of us here at Speed of Story and Avod 3 Event Production, thanks for listening and for sharing the show with others if you choose to do so. We hope you'll join us again for another episode of Culture Amplified.